In 2006, when he was 50 years old, Michael Kavarik of Greenwich, New York, was a third grade teacher in South Colonies School when he felt a lump in his left breast. He never thought he would develop breast cancer, but he did. Although male breast cancer is rare, it exists. Nationally, the American Cancer Society predicts some 2,400 men will develop the disease this year, 430 will die from it. Contrast that with the 232,000 new cases in women and the prediction that 40,000 will die. Kavarik has been working to raise awareness about male breast cancer and has written a book about his experience, Healing Within: My Journey with Breast Cancer. And it's a great pleasure to welcome Michael Kavarik to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Oh, thank you so much for having me on and giving me this opportunity.
It's an honor to have you here and to talk to you about this. The book is fascinating on several levels, and we'll try to get to as many as we can here.
Sure.
But let us begin with the fact of just male breast cancer, just the numbers itself. It is a rare thing.
Yes.
So, and you write about this, how hard is it once you, when you feel the lump, is there concern right away, or do you just have to keep plugging through the medical system to get the final diagnosis?
Well, it was more for me in the beginning of who I was at that time. My GP had I had found the lump. I went to my GP. He had said to me at that point, we can have this looked at. And I, because of fear, just said, no, let's wait. Let's wait and see.
Yeah.
And just kind of going through it, eventually I my nipple inverted and I went back. And so he had me at a surgeon. And what was—
Because it could have been a cyst.
And that's actually what they thought. And interestingly, he had said, during that first observation of it, that he felt it was a cyst, but that they were just starting to hear about male breast cancer, which I could not even wrap my head around.
Yeah.
When I sat in the surgeon's office after the surgery of the removal of the lump, he was telling me that the lab report had said, that it most likely came from my lungs, but that he and my GP strongly felt that I was going to be one of those cases, the rare cases of male breast cancer. So the lab couldn't even put their head around it. And I think because it was all just kind of starting to come to be at that point.
It was new, and at least new to them.
Yes.
And there have been reported cases for a long time. What is another aspect of the story is how you then go about treatment. So because there is this is how we treat women,
mm-hmm.
then what do we know about treating men with this disease?
Yeah. And the first time, I did the tamoxifen for four and a half years. I just kept looking for that 5-year mark to be done with it.
Right.
Then had the second diagnosis in 2010. And it was that diagnosis where I was now at a new oncologist because my initial oncologist had retired. And her words were, Michael, we don't know what to do with men where the cancer comes back and they've been on tamoxifen for 4.5 years. So they then put me on 6.5 weeks of radiation and then put me on the drug Lupron, which was a much stronger drug.
Lupron is an interesting drug because it is used for men with prostate cancer.
Yes,
and is also used in women to basically force menopause in women, and so needless to say, very expensive, and also it's a harsh drug. How long were you on it?
I was on it most likely. I started the shots in December, and I think by that March, I had made the decision to stop the drug because of what I was experiencing.
Give us an idea of what you were experiencing.
Within the first week after being diagnosed, after having the shot, I had the hot flashes,
right?
Which I have a full understanding of what women go through now.
Sure.
I then started getting mood swings. I also then got severe headaches, pain in my groin area. And they were just constantly coming. And at the time, my oncologist was saying, well, we can give you this additional drug on top of the Lupron. And thankfully, like what I write about in the book, you know, the cancer was this catalyst for me to really take this journey within and to kind of a transformation within myself of finding my voice. And it was during my time with the drug that I started hearing my voice and started realizing this is taking too much of me away. But I had no idea where to go with it. And, you know, what I have learned is as you kind of open yourself up and surrender to where you are, it is amazing the people that kind of cross your path. And I started crossing paths with a very dear friend now, Maud, who does Reiki. I explored yoga, I explored acupuncture. I crossed paths with an energy doctor from Vermont. And I started understanding for me how my energy flow was where I was kind of concentrating and how a disruption in my energy flow leads to disease or illness. Mm-hmm. But that I also saw a path, these two paths unfolding in front of me, which was my emotional self and my spiritual self. And because of that drug and because of the intense struggle with it, I realized those two paths needed to be together and that I needed to heal my emotional self and look at things within in order to heal from the cancer.
There was surgery.
Yes.
And you had surgery, which would be the equivalent of a mastectomy.
Yes, actually, yeah. I've had lumpectomy. I've had two mastectomies. I've had nipple reconstruction, nipple removal. Yeah. And so went through those avenues also.
And is that's all part. So then the healing takes on an extra level because you're not only healing from the cancer, but you're healing from the scars of your body.
Yeah. Yeah. And being a person who had struggled with body image all my life, and then here I was with, you know, these scars on my chest and looking at that and really looking at, you know, how was another human being going to look at me? How was I going to look at myself? You know, and that adds a whole nother element to this healing process that you're going through, you know, that you said.
Where are you with traditional medicine now?
Right now, what I am doing is I have a wonderful oncologist in Bennington that I had switched to. Once I had decided to stop the drug, I switched oncologist. And she is traditional, but extremely open to the other avenues that I'm doing. She was at first seeing me every 3 months. Now has put me back to every 6 months. And every time I go in, we do the blood work. We sit, we talk, we go on. I share with her exactly where I'm at. And so what I am doing now is just I'm seeing her and we're taking it day by day. I'm doing acupuncture every month, Reiki. I go to yoga. I see my energy doctor and really focus on what was one of the gifts of this journey, Joe, was in that healing within, was looking at and becoming very, very aware of, you know, the thoughts that I was holding on to, the anger, the resentment, my actions or reactions. And I really focus now on those elements, you know, and I was choosing to hold on to certain thoughts or certain actions, certain reactions. And now I figure, you know, and I realize I can let them go.
The thing that is fascinating yet troubling in the book is that, I mean, this is 7 years. I mean, it's a long road.
Yeah.
And I mean, you're at a place now where you're comfortable, and yet you, as any patient with cancer, they never know what's around the bend. But it's because you get the second and the third diagnosis, I mean, that's a long road.
Yeah. But it's also, it's also what I look at as a wonderful catalyst, where fear, you know, was such a big part of it. You know, fear now is my teacher, where when I know I'm fearful about something, then I have something that I need to learn. But yes, it is. And After my first diagnosis, I just wanted the cancer to go away. I didn't want to talk about it. I didn't want to hear about it. And now I know that it's with me. You know, it's there. It's a part of who I am now. And so it will continue.
How did you look at the cancer? Is it become, because you write about this in the book, and I find it's interesting, because it's not like the devil. It's something else. It's something that you're working against, but you don't demonize it the way that we so often do.
Yeah. I did at first. You know, I did first when I was going through the denial. And now it's more like a teacher to me in a sense of it's a reminder of who I want to be and how I want to choose to live my life. And so it's evolved from that demonic status to it's here. And, you know, I'm not going to be afraid of it. I am not going to let it run my life. You know, what it's going to do is help me choose better to live.
And to change your relationship and to change your understanding, and as you point out, not just of cancer, but of all things that we fear.
Yes, yes. It, like I said, it's become that wonderful teacher in so many ways that it's really allowed me to kind of focus on going through life in a whole different realm, which is wonderful.
The new book is Healing Within, My Journey with Breast Cancer. Michael Kovarik is the author, and the book is, you can find it in all of our local independent bookstores and, of course, online as well. It's Healing Within, My Journey with Breast Cancer. Michael, a great pleasure to have you on the program. I wish you all the welcome.
Thank you so much for this time. Thank you so much. This has been wonderful.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.